Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Touchline Fracker. This evening, I am joined by members of all the club pods, so we are well represented. I love it when we have 100% turnout. I'll start with you, Babs. How are you doing, mate?
I'm fantastic, man.
A shocking performance on the fight card.
Listen. I had to give the streets what they wanted, man.
Yeah, you didn't give the streets what they wanted.
I don't know if you can see over there, but Tobes is smiling.
He won't be smiling for not much longer. With that being said, how you doing, Tobes?
Not great, but we move, man. We move.
Yeah, man. Ellis, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm blessed, bro. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. It's been a good result. Something light, you know? Not in heavy.
Slight.
Shabs, what you saying? It's been a minute. How you been, man?
It's been a minute. Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm happy to be here as always, man. But yeah. especially in this moment, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Could have been worse. Could have been techie. Could have been sticky.
You're on the short straw.
I'm on ease right now.
So. Exactly. Yeah. And obviously, then you've done your stint, and then you know next week's game comes, and that's somebody else's problem.
And then Exactly. Exactly. I have my turn. I drew my straw.
Sweet. Before we start, obviously I have to do my due diligence, remind you all, if you're not already part of the Discord community, what are you doing? It was great today. A lot of bows on people's head tops, mainly Spurses. The Touchacunas weren't there for the Arsenal one, but you know, we love football, so we were there. We chatted it up.
We're nervous.
I know what it was. Guys, I'm not even gonna snitch on guys on a podcast.
They're not all built for the grind, man.
It is what it is. And if you're not signing up to the Discord, make sure you're signed up to the YouTube, subscribe. You've got the fight cards, the club pod visuals come out, and all additional content that we produce comes out. So pit stops on there, court sides on there, ring sides on there, and whatever else we've got coming in the pipeline. You know, we've always got something coming. And for those of you who want even more content, we got our club pods too. Check that out. With all that being said, let's get into this weekend's games. And yeah, I'll start with you, Shabs. So at the end of the day, a pretty comfy win.
Yeah, you can't have complaints after a 3-0 win. But lo and behold, I've got complaints, man.
Give us your thoughts on the lineup.
This is where Touchacunas comes from.
Yeah, give us your thoughts on the lineup, and then your thoughts on the performance, and then where you are generally with Arsenal at the moment, because you haven't been on the main pod for a while.
I think we're bereft of quality. That's no secret. Everyone knows that. So with the lineup, you know, there's kind of like, there are the players that are missing, the players who, you know, who we know, like the likes of Tierney and the David Luizes, et cetera, the Odegaards and that. And then there are the players that, you know, kind of need to be rested to kind of save us, hopefully try and save us next week. But bear in mind, you know, the night, this was played on Thursday, so not much time between then and the late kickoff today. So with the lineup, I kind of think Arteta had to do what he had to do. I can't see much else that he could have worked with, bearing in mind that Aubameyang was out. Maybe could have gone with Martinelli up top, but it, you know, Martinelli featured, which was good. I'm happy. I'm always happy to see Martinelli in the lineup. there were questions about the shape. Was he going to go with? Was he going to maintain this shape, or was he going to try something different? He maintained the shape, which is, you know, credit to him. He's sticking to his principles, and I think Granit Xhaka at left back was a bit of a surprise, but it worked. They didn't seem to find a way to exploit him, so he started at left. He started at left back, and it's kind of what Xhaka does anyway. Like we've seen him play in games now, where he can kind of drop into that space or drop really deep. He was a bit of a fixed left back today, but yeah. Apart from that, it was kind of all right. Could he have done something? I'm not sure what happened with Bellerin. I think Bellerin was just on the bench, but Chambers started right back. He did a good job, so I'm not too mad at it. And Saka played in the 10. You know, I think the questions before the game are: does Saka play? Should he play? Should he play left back? Bear in mind that, you know, we've got injuries and no real cover there. I'm glad that he played in the forward line because, you know, we've seen it without him and it's not pretty. So he did some positive things today, especially in the first half. So I'm happy with the lineup, to be fair to you. And then the result was the result. These men are pussies because it's all well and good turning up against Sheffield United, but this is a relegation side. Like, this is a side that, you know, like, they're going down. They're doomed. So, like, yeah, you can come up and, you know, Lacazette can be clean through today and do the business today, but,
he was
like,
clean,
yeah, man.
On Thursday and he didn't do the business.
He was clean from Thursday and he did. Well, he wasn't clean through, really, because he couldn't get away from anyone. He couldn't get away from anyone, so he wasn't clean through, you know. Had all types of things for Lacazette, lack of ability, lack of player, he just lacks everything. He lacked everything on Thursday, but somehow today he didn't. And yeah, I'm not even going to be critical of him. He had a good game today, so I'm happy with that. But yeah, man, I just think it's really frustrating. Like, we're looking at April, we're even touching mid-April now. These are our ninth in the table. Like, you know, like, well, what is there to really sing and dance about after a 3-0 victory at Sheffield United? So, yeah, it's 3 points. I'm happy. We could have lost. We didn't lose. We couldn't really have lost today because they didn't come with much. But you don't know what I mean. But yeah, man, I don't even want to sing too tough. Honourable mention for Ceballos, to be fair, because
Did Lewis pay you to say that?
Nah, it didn't, man. And I've been onto Lewis, and Lewis wants to fight me.
Paid you, bro.
Real talk, Lewis wants to fight me because I've been calling it as it is with Ceballos. But if you're gonna perform and do little bits like he did today, I'm gonna give you credit for it. But, you know, Ceballos can turn up against these baby boys like Sheffield United anyway. Like, this is what he done the same time last time against Sheffield United at the back end of last season as well. He had another blinding game against. He turned up today, so I'm gonna give him his credit. He got an assist. Credit to him. You know what I mean? But do that again on Thursday when it matters. Carry that through for the rest of the season, because yeah, man, we're not seeing this from you regular.
Yeah, that's all fair enough. I want to talk about Arsenal with the rest of the panel. So, Tobes, Ellis, Babs. A lot of chatter about Arsenal since Thursday. A lot of murmurs coming out in terms of Arteta falling out with senior players in the dressing room, etc., etc. From the outside looking in, what are your thoughts on their season? Obviously, like Shabs has said, they're ninth, but that's kind of the surface of it. Kind of looking underneath the bonnet, as you were, what do you think of Arsenal's season? Do you think they've put in the building blocks to have success going forward, or do you think they should cut ties with the manager?
They should cut ties with the manager. he's not... You have to... There are obviously circumstances and situations that are out of his control. Like, he inherited, like, most of the dross that he's got in that Arsenal squad, etc., etc. But ultimately, you have to move that to the side and ask yourself, is he doing the best job he can be doing as a manager? Forget Arsenal. As a manager, is he getting the best out of his players? Is he playing the right football required for the club that he's managing? And is he getting results? If all those three things are a no, why is there justification for him to keep his job? I don't dislike Arteta. I actually liked him at the start when he was there last season. You could see that there was some organisation in Arsenal. Of course, he got the FA Cup, etc. And he was getting a tune out of certain players as well. But this season, I don't care how good the football has looked in the last 3-4 months. Arsenal are not a team that is worthy of mass respect anymore. And that's largely down to, I think right now, this season, and that's largely down to him. They've lost 12 games in the league this season. And we're talking about backing him, doing this, this, that, and the other. They're not a good side. Shabs has literally just mentioned it now. And it sounds hypocritical for me because they literally just slapped us a couple of weeks ago. But we're not a good side either. We're shit. Let's be real. We are shit. And they are a side that for me, they don't look like they're coached well enough. The manager makes weird decisions where with players who he favoritizes, players who he wants to start, players who he doesn't want to start. And furthermore, they're not a consistent side. So his remit as a manager, he's failing in that regard.
Cool. That's pretty emphatic there. Didn't know if Babs or Ellis wanted to add anything onto that.
No, it's just the same thing. Sorry, Babs, before I go on. It's just the same thing, what everyone's saying. I think a couple of months ago, we spoke about Arsenal on the pod and we spoke about the lack of identity and the lack of thoughtfulness that Arteta's bringing to the team. And it still continued. I watched Arsenal on Thursday.
Well, no, just and... do you think he lacks thought or do you think his thoughts are incorrect? Because I think there's I don't think he's not a thinking manager. I think that would be doing him a disservice.
Yeah, because he's easy.
More about the decisions he makes. Shabs mentions Martinelli not playing enough. We look at how long it took him to get Smith Rowe in the side. All the different positions he played Saka in, if you agree or disagree with that, etc., etc. So I don't think he's necessarily not a thinking manager, but it's more about his decisions. And I guess for me, or I can see both sides of the coin. And for me, if you're talking about a manager who probably at this stage in his career, this job is too big for him. He doesn't have the experience. So he hasn't gone somewhere smaller, made the mistakes, which has allowed him to know which things work and which things don't work. Gone to clubs where he's maybe not had that preference for younger players, but a younger player's come through and changed his mind. He's having to do that all. We're watching him do it all on the fly as we're going along. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Shabs. Would you say that since December, January, the performances have improved and the results probably don't match the performances?
The performances have improved marginally. But yeah, I don't even think the performances have improved. I don't think that's fair for me to say. I think the creativity in the side and the attack to a tiny degree has improved. I think that's what's improved. Arsenal lack control in games. They lack game management. They're very naive and not able to see out game situations. You know, there aren't spells in games where we're completely dominant. I know this may be unrealistic of football right now. Very few teams dominate games to finish, but we very rarely have spells where we're in control of games and where we can just do that. Bar a day like today, where I just think like the opposition is just fodder. Sorry to any listening Sheffield United fans. It just is what it is. The results don't match. The results aren't consistent. There are games that have lost, we should have won. There are games where, we're good enough to win. There are two sides to it, because there's a side about the quality, the team lacking quality, and there are some players in who play for Arsenal who just aren't, they shouldn't be anywhere near us as a club. But when I look at other teams in the league who have outperformed us and got results and whatnot. They're not as I couldn't say that like West Ham have got more quality in their side than Arsenal. I couldn't necessarily say that Leicester have got more quality in their side than Arsenal to a player in some areas. Yeah. So, but they're comfortably ahead of us. So, you have to ask questions. And yeah, some of it is hangover. Some of it is legacy from Wenger. Some of it I put on the club. But a lot of it I put on on the coach, especially now. This is someone who's been in charge for 18 months. What more, like, we should be able to see something. The only consistent thing I see about pattern of play is that one move where we can pass it out the back and progress it. Apart from that, I don't see much. So yeah, man.
Cool.
So on to me.
what was I going to say? Sorry, Ellis, I interjected. So yeah, feel free to finish your thoughts on the
just say really, what you said in regards to he's a thinking coach, but I think his ideas are not coming across well. I think some probably outside looking in, some of the senior players are looking at him thinking, boy to boy, you're not really the guy to be telling me what to do like that. Do you know what I'm saying? A few reports coming out, he's fell out with Leno. Is it correct me if I'm wrong? Was it Leno? Yeah, Aubameyang had the flu.
The Leno thing the weren't true.
That same Shabs and Tobes have got, yeah?
Yeah, same flu. I was kind of interested to see that Aubameyang didn't start on Thursday. I don't know what was in there. It was kind of weird. A big game like that, Aubameyang's not starting. So Aubameyang's probably looking like, I'm the main goal getter here and you're not playing me. So there's a lot of discontent.
Not by the numbers, he ain't.
It's not by the, but then again, you have to look at Arteta, because before Arteta came, he was banging goals. He's been banging goals wherever he's gone. Then Arteta's come, he's stuck him on the left. He's tried that, what Shab was talking about, same tactic, take from the back, switch it over to the left, and you find it's not really working. Your main goal scorer, you want him in the box. You want to try and get the ball in the box as quick as possible for him. And it's not happening. But if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be calling for his head, because you can't be in April, all your mates are fighting for Champions League and you're just there swag surfing in ninth. It's a bit dead, isn't it?
Swag surfing, wow. Ain't heard that term in a minute. let's get on to the big game today. Manchester United versus Tottenham. 3-1 win for us, something light. Before I give my thoughts, I'd like to get your thoughts, Tobe, as you weren't on the Discord, so... enlighten us, please, sir.
Bow, bow, bow.
bruv, it's literally just a continuation of 2021 with that result. Like, we have been a diabolical team to watch. We've had diabolical results. We have some diabolical players, and we have a war criminal of a manager. So it's a recipe for disaster. So, you're seeing the culmination of all those things unfold in front of you week in, week out when we step on that pitch. I think we spoke a couple times in the lead up to this as well. And even in all my previews, there was no chance in hell I was expecting Spurs to come out of this with 3 points. It was either going to be a draw to Spurs or a Man United win. And then when you look into the fact that Man United have legit, I think they've only lost like one game in like the last, what, like 3-4 months of Premier League football, something like that. it tells you need to know, like, this is a side that are, irrespective of what we say about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, this is a side that simply don't lose away from home. Went to Stamford Bridge, clean sheet. Went to the Emirates, clean sheet. Went to the Etihad, a win. Went to Anfield, clean sheet. So they don't lose. And they're coming to a ground against the side that slapped them 6-1 in the reverse fixture. Revenge was always going to be at the back of their mind, and I felt like they were worthy winners today. Like Man United, I thought the first half was a bit cagey. We were fortunate to not even be behind 1-0 anyway because of that Son decision for that goal. But again, our goal was a bit fortunate. The Lindelof not getting a proper contact on that pass, and then Son tapping home. He needed that goal, big goal for him, but it did not galvanize us the way we wanted our team to be galvanized. Because in the second half, Man United literally just stepped it up another gear, and we couldn't compete in terms of energy levels, in terms of the ball movement, in terms of chance creation. We couldn't compete. And people will say, oh yeah, 3-1, this, that. 3-1 was the right score. I think Man United, they were that good on the day that they deserve to be like a sizable gap in the scoreline. So I felt 3-1 was justified. Spurs are a sinking ship. We have a sinking manager, and we have a lot of issues that we need to fix. And we just have to pray and hope that the people at the top are willing to do the dirty work to try and get these issues fixed.
Damning. From our perspective, the 6-1 early in the season was a real watershed moment for us. And that was kind of when Ollie decided that he didn't trust Paul Pogba, or he felt that the centre-backs needed extra protection with Fred and McTominay. So I expected that again today in terms of the starting lineup. He didn't disappoint in that regard. Gave Paul Pogba the middle wing role, which we've seen him do to varying amounts of quality. And then obviously you've got Bruno, who's a somewhat known quantity, and Edinson Cavani, who's always a goal threat. I thought, like with you, the start was pretty cagey. Neither side wanted to really make any mistakes. The first goal was good, the first goal, air quotes here, that was disallowed. I thought that was some good play. I didn't think that should have been ruled out, personally speaking. I thought that was shocking. Obviously, you guys have seen the post-match back and forth between Ollie and Jose. They don't like each other. And like, I feel like the press, when they're talking to them, they pick at it. And you can always feel like the tension underneath the comments they're both making about each other. But obviously, with a loss, Jose will use any opportunity to take the heat off of his team. And Ollie's given him that. So after that, you guys go and score a good goal. Lindelof for sure was poor, but that was quality from Kane and a good decision making from Lucas Moura. And yeah. I'm with you. Son has had a pretty rough 2021, so nice for him to get on the score sheet. For like 5 minutes or so, he was everywhere, like getting dropped, scoring goals, dropping back, and like, you know, winning the ball for you guys in good positions. So we went in at halftime, and I won't lie, I was absolutely fuming. Because that 6-1 result, like, every time I'm chatting to you or Spurs, shut up, we beat you 6-1. Like, I'm not really clear. Like, and as much as you want to be like, yeah, it was a freak result. It was just a horrible performance. It's a horrible performance from us. So for me, this and obviously Jose as well, you know, his time here. So this game meant a lot for me, personally speaking. So yes. When we went in 1-0, I was absolutely fuming. Sai was on the Discord. You know, Sai, he can talk himself out of a paper bag. He was finding every reason why, you know, yeah, that was fine. I don't care, son. That was a foul, et cetera, cool. So we started the second half really well. And I should have known, because we've watched dozens of Spurs games this season. And this is what happened. You go ahead and then your team goes back within yourself and you invite pressure on. But despite that, we were really good. Pogba, I thought, was brilliant today.
Excellent.
He made a lot of things happen. Was unlucky not to get on the score sheet.
Was it unlucky? Or was it just poor decision making?
No,
I don't think that was unlucky. That was just him being too.
Yeah, that was just poor decision making.
Unlucky.
That's him being too flashy, my guy.
What's the style for?
Like, listen, he's a flair player.
Flair players do flair things.
You know, you put Hoy Bier on the floor. So so with that, you know, Bruno did his thing. Who scored our first goal? Remind me.
It was Fred.
Terrible. That guy.
That's a good goal, though.
He was terrible on the ball, but
was it a good goal? Or just caught Cavani and nothing?
Just that bunga bunga ball, man.
Now for the initial Cavani chance, that way of pass was very good.
That pass was good. I felt like his energy in the second half was good as well.
I think it was good in the second half.
He's a chaos baller. Like,
like Lucas Moura. They have their purposes at times.
He thrives in games where there's no structure and people are just running around. The minute there's a structure and tactics are being imparted, he becomes a non-entity.
So this was a perfect game for him then.
I don't care.
We hear managers say, press, without no coaching, no organisation, no nothing. Just press.
It's one of them ones where Morales just seemed too much that he doesn't like Fred, which I understand. I get it. I'm with it.
The body of work is nuts, Shabs. The body of work is absolutely nuts.
What you say, Morales? One good album, like five.
Yeah, one good album, like
10,
bro.
One good album. You said one good album. You had one good single on the album.
Single in 10 albums.
Fucking feature, if anything.
He grabs his goal. Rashford, Ollie really, really needs to take this guy out of the firing line. He's clearly at this point so hobbled. And he continues to play him because I get it. He's the real only real consistent behind behind the line attacking threat pace he takes players on, but his execution is not very good. He had to come off against Granada. He came off again today, and just give him 2-3 weeks off, man. We'll talk about the top four race, but from my perspective, we're sorted now, and we're 2-0 up in the first leg, and we're coming home. So yeah, give him a couple of games off just to rest himself, because yeah, it's affecting his performances and potentially affect him long term. Cool. So we brought on Greenwood. He's coming off some good form this season. Two goals in his last two games, and he came on and was really good. Linked up well with Bruno for Cavani's goal. Reguilon got dealt with, a little salad there from Bruno, and then that cross, that cross from Greenwood right on Cavani's head. Listen, Cavani runs around, doesn't really offer anything apart from that. But if you're a side that are going to create lots of chances, Cavani's a striker you want, because he'll make the run. What most strikers do, they'll make the run once and then they don't get the ball. He'll make the run once, then he'll come back and then he'll make another run, then he'll make another run, and he's constantly moving. So for us who don't create that many chances, for a lot of the game, he just looks like, what is he doing? Why is he not dropping back? Why is he not linking play? Why is he not allowing us to sustain possession in the final third? But for those moments there like that, you can always rely on him to get on the end of it. His finishing can be somewhat, but he'll always get on the end of it. And today, he had two chances and he actually took both of them, only one not counting. And then Greenwood's goal. Great bit of skill from Pogba, like I mentioned to Tobes, put his boy Højbjerg on the floor. And then Greenwood does what he does. Like, he's struggled this season. Part of that has definitely been himself. He doesn't quite know how to play wide. Games passing by. I think there's definitely an onus from Ollie for him to maintain the width, but I think as if the play is going down the left-hand side, which it regularly does with us, at some point you need to make that back post run. You need to be there at the back post to pick up chances that will trickle down to you. What ends up happening is he camps himself out really far and the whole game passes him by. 60, 70 minutes, he comes off. But when you have him in and around that box, left foot, right foot, I'm guaranteeing he's going to get off a good shot, going to hit the target more often than not, and more often than not, he's gonna score. The goal against Leicester, cut back, left foot finish. The goal in the other game was a header, instinctive again against Brighton. And then the goal again today came onto his right foot. Lloris, you could argue, could have done better, but that's Lloris now. But then Greenwood done what he does best and what he's been doing his whole young career, which is bagging goals. So for us, that puts us in second, 63 points. The thing is, I'm not happy with Ollie, but
you have to give him credit, man.
My thing is, I can't quantify the credit that I give him.
He's won today, 3-1. We got.
Yeah, that's fine. That's the one result. But I'm talking against the breadth of the season and basically what foundations has he put in place for me to be like, okay, this is what we're doing okay-ish. And if he has more time or he gets better players in, I see this improving. I really can't quantify what he really does for us. But he's in a league where you're seeing other managers struggle, so he's doing something right. So we'll give him credit for that. I think his ceiling is top four, man.
He's making it work somehow. Like I kind of understand.
That's one of the worst games of football I've ever watched.
Yeah. And that's what it is. It's kind of like you see, like, it's kind of like, where do you, what do you place a higher value on as a fan? You know, is it about tangible outputs, or is it about conceptual stuff? Is it about, you know, I want this manager to make us play better, and sit, or is it about actually, as long as we progress and I can see the progression, you know, I can measure the progression by way of results, by way of points, by way of climbing up the table, by way of getting to the latter stages of cup competitions. And I kind of get it. Like, you know, an idealist is always going to say, I want us to win playing well. That's the ideal in football, really. But Ollie's managing his players. He's managing the mandem. And that's hard to do. Mourinho can't do it. You say what you like about Mourinho can't do it.
For me, it's not even... Yes, playing well is important to me because I love football and I like to enjoy watching my team play. But even if we didn't play well, a clear, tangible identity in terms of what we're trying to do out there. I'm not sure. It's very vibesy from game to game, different players contributing, and it's all coming together and it's leading to a positive correlation in terms of results. Obviously, there's a blocker because where we hadn't lost to Leicester since 2014. We played them in an FA Cup quarter final and they batter us. We can't get past the semi-final stages of these cup competitions. So I think that's where it's even more damning, because when you're getting to these latter stages and you're coming up against teams that are equally competent and managers who are as good, or most likely in Ollie's case, better tacticians, then that gap in your ability is showing. The 60 points in a normal season, that gets you a top four finish, top five finish. Well,
I get what you mean, though.
Ollie is, for me, a little bit like, he's a bit Wengerish in his, not in his footballing style, but the same way that Wenger used to just go out, not really give the guys much instructions, just tell them, like, you lot are better than them. Like, just go and play. Like, you need to find your own solutions. That's what he reminds me of. But again, if we look at it, United have lost four games in the league this season, the same amount as Man City. It's the draws. It's the games where you have drawn. That's why, you know, there's such a substantive gap between you and them, really. And then I think everyone else this season has really lagged. So you're comfortably in second place right now. I can't remember if there's a game difference between
there's only one game in hand for United.
But, City, yeah. But not between us and everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, between you lot and third. So I think when I look at it, I get it. Like I said, there's nothing remarkable about this guy, and yet and still, he is making stuff. He's making it happen. And look at there's guys that have gone there before him, since Fergie, you know, who have got a lot more on him in terms of managerial credentials, and none of them have done, like. Well, you could say Mourinho had that season where he finished second, but it weren't vibes like this. You know what I mean? Like, you lot are hooping. There's times where you lot are hooping.
Yeah.
It's true. Like, it's facts. Like, and if you find a way to make it work with... I like that you lot can bring up Greenwood off the bench and Greenwood bags a goal. Get your number up, lad. You know what I mean? Get your numbers up, lad. You're a talented baller. Go on there. I'm not just bringing you on for the sake of it. Like Arsenal, for example, bring on Eddie Nketiah. He's never going to... Like, to do what? Greenwood's actually going on knowing, yeah, going to affect the game. And you've got a chance of scoring as well. He scores. I like that, man. It's kind of vibesy. I get, like, you lot have seen the heights. So this is kind of like, nah, you kind of always want more. But right now, it's a good position to be in.
Yeah, and also, like, if you compare it to, like, let's say Arteta, and that he's getting the best out of his better players to an extent. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you got Bruno banging goals. Today, Pogba's hooping, as you will say, Mariah. It was him, you know what I'm saying? Like, you found a good way to get the best of it and to make Manchester United play better, or just to be more effective. And I get it, like Shav says, he's not the most, like, tactically, he's not a tactical genius of any sort in it. But the fact that if you can get your best players playing well, that just helps you, like, it's halfway to where you want to be. So yeah, man, you enjoy the thing, man. Enjoy the vibes, Mariah, man. You know you're enjoying
it. I do get what Mariah is saying, though, because, like, when you watch Man United, like, half the time you watch them, you just think, how the hell are this team second? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, they don't look good. And, like, it feels weird calling Man United a good side, but you have to call them a good side because of some of the players they have and the results that they've put down in the league this season and when they are on the table. But just on that point that you made, Ellis, though, I know obviously Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, his stumbling block is that he's not won anything at United. He gets to the semis and he bottles it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But these players who are thriving right now for Man United, your Rashfords, your Pogbas, etc., these same players are under a certain manager who manages our club now, who is now going through the motions where all of a sudden now this squad is apparently this abysmal team that can't beat Newcastle, can't do this, that and the other. So I feel like in that respect, you have to give Ole Gunnar Solskjaer that credit, because he's getting a tune out of players that apparently you couldn't get a tune out of when a certain man was in the job a couple years before. So, hey.
Like any good team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. We'll keep watching. Babs, you've been pretty quiet so far, so it only makes sense for me to come over to you guys. Up the Chelsea, as it were. So you guys had a really impressive result yesterday, a 4-1 win away at Crystal Palace. Off the back of a good week, to be honest. Talk us through yesterday's game, the lineup, the performance. I missed the game, unfortunately. I had some other things to do. But there was there's a lot of talk about the attack and how well it hummed. So yeah, for those of us who haven't watched, give us some context. What were your thoughts?
Happily. So one of the things that I think that was key in this lineup was having an actual more fluid attacking lineup. So we had Pulisic, Kai and Mount, who are all able to, like, you know, cover along the forward thinking areas of the field. They're able to, you know, they're able to use the ball in ways that players like such as like Timo Werner are not able to use. And I feel like when you have players like that who are able to actually play with the ball, it makes it a lot easier to hold the possession and actually feel like a team. Because if I was to compare it to a game like against Everton, for instance, you know, that was another good result. But the difference being was that we had Werner on the right wing. And when you can't get involved in games, it kind of feels like you're playing with 10 men. Whereas this game here today, it felt like we were playing with like 4 attackers, if anything. Because, you know, we had Cho on the right wing back. We had Mount playing off him on the right wing. And then we had Kai in the hole, in the false nine, with Pulisic on the left. And I do feel like having a line like this, it allows us to play this fluid football that Tuchel wants to play. And another thing that I think was very important to see was the actual approach towards this game. Because I felt, if I saw him harking back to like last week against West Brom, I feel like we were a bit more apprehensive on the ball. We weren't as forward thinking. You know, we played a bit more of a defensive lineup. And I don't think it's something to like look too into, but I think it's promising to the fact that we actually have players, you know, which our previous manager thought, which would actually be good enough to actually have an attack. And yeah, I can't really complain. You know, if I look at the first half, I felt like our intensity was amazing. You know, we kept hold of the ball really well. Kovacic and Jorginho were amazing. Like the position they were able to like get the ball and feed it into Kai to just pull out the...
You mentioned Kovacic, because we had a discussion about earlier in the day during, I think it was maybe the Liverpool game. What did he bring to the performance yesterday?
I think it's what he normally brings. You know, he's always just securing possession. Like, he rarely ever loses the ball. He's able to progress the ball with his dribbling, and it is a good asset to have on your team. I have my own personal feelings on Kovacic. I'm guessing that's what you wanted to find out more of. But let's focus on the positives for now. You know,
nah, I do feel like your feelings, bro.
Yeah, you know, I feel like he's a good player, but I don't think he's anything more than a squad player. You know, I feel like as good as he is with the ball, you know, he's good possessionally. I don't think he's amazing defensively. I don't think he's an amazing passer of the ball. And I feel like where his strengths lie with the ball in terms of like dribbling and being able to progress the ball, I just don't feel like it adds amazing value to the team. Not that it doesn't add value, but I don't think it's value which is like quantifiable for me personally. I think he's a good squad player.
That's what I said to you yesterday. I said, if his passing was as good as his dribbling, if that sort of abilities were reversed, you wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
I think it's because his ability to progress the ball is not through the typical way which most midfielders do, which is passing. It's through his ball carrying ability. But essentially, for me, his quality is in the fact that he's able to consistently progress your play. I watch Manchester United, so I am very...
Oh, man, you're starving, bro. I get you, man.
Midfielders who are unable to do that. Shabs will be able to attest to that at times. Ellis will be able to attest to that at times. And Toes will be able to attest to that at times. So don't take that for granted. That quality doesn't make him necessarily an all-action midfielder like some of his predecessors who he might... Yeah.
I mean, sorry to interrupt you, but...
Yeah, no, sure. I don't think you're sorry at all.
I can see a man in the background, Ellis, nodding his head. And if I look at that midfield, I know why you're nodding your head when you have a man like Ryan Adam, running around at their park. Like, I understand, man. Like, I'm not saying he's a bad midfielder. I'm just saying I think his best role will be a squad player. I don't think he's really a player that I'd want to have starting a week in, week out. I do think he has his qualities, but I think he's a player that I feel like with a lot of players, right, it's easy to appreciate them from afar. You're not watching a week in, week out. You know, I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I just feel he has his limitation when it comes to actually being able to use the ball. Yeah, and if you are a type of player that has half the dribbling ability, but more passing, it does aid in terms of like our chance creation.
I do get what you're saying, though. I do get what you're saying. But just looking at this game in isolation, though, this Crystal Palace game, I'm not going to lie to you. I switched off after 7 minutes because I knew what way this game was heading. Literally one-way traffic within like the first 2-3 minutes. I said, yeah, safe. I'm out of here. But I watched the highlights after the game. And from what I saw, him and Jorginho were passing through Palace like a knife through butter, man. Like they were actually like not just keeping the game ticking, but they were actually like going for the jugular with some of their passes. And I felt that like that side of Kovacic is the side of Kovacic that you would like to see more of if you could.
Exactly. Exactly. Because if I have to harken back to the West Brom game, that was the exact same pivot that played there. And we saw what happened. They got
terrible. Terrible. Yeah. So I've got a question. So did he have it in his locker and not use it enough? Or was it due to the poor quality of the opposition he was up against?
I think it's opposition, personally. It's opposition. Because if I look at a West Brom, they were a lot more able to actually press on midfield and they actually wanted to press on midfield. Whereas Palace, boy, they had a man, what's his name? Riyad Vald? I thought it was a centre back.
Yeah,
I don't know. I thought it was previously a centre back.
I feel like I had a centre mid and centre back. So,
do you know what? I don't think that's fair though, because I think West Brom are a way worse side than Palace, and I think that that game, if you look at Chelsea under Tuchel's reign, that is a game in isolation. That West Brom game, I think Chelsea have dominated. Chelsea have controlled games. I was talking about controlling games. If you look at them under him, they've controlled games by and large. And like yesterday, they were extremely dominant. This cold is killing me. Yesterday, they were...
I was going to say, it sounded like you're about to cry about these Arsenal performances.
No.
I'll let you carry on, man.
Never that. But I think it's a bit harsh on Kovacic is my point, basically, and the point about the opposition, because I think that West Brom are way worse than Crystal Palace, you know. And that's all I was going to say, man. Don't be so harsh.
But also, I think you're being, because we have a player like that in Genie. And they're kind of similar.
Yeah, I can't lie. Don't compare them, man.
Yeah, what?
Babs, hold on. You just said that he will be a sub for you. So why are you getting all uppity for?
Yeah, he would be. And Genie wouldn't be at the club.
I think you can compare.
Of course, you can compare them. They're the same. They're similar type of players.
Yeah. Elaborate further.
Thank you. Who don't necessarily? They're not. Passing midfielders, they're more players that like to get on the ball and like to dribble from deep. And that's the type of things we like. Genie hasn't really done it as much, but he's got it in his locker.
Dribbles. Sound like idea dribbles.
No. I'm back in Ellis. I don't think it's idea similar. Because we've actually seen Wijnaldum do it. Wijnaldum can beat man, and he is one of them players where it's not like a mediocre trait of it's a good trait of his. He is able to beat players, and he's been able to do that in this league as well. So we're not going to do that.
But I'm going to ask you this, Toast. Where was the last time you saw this from Wijnaldum consistently? Because I could say Mane's been a consistent goal scorer. We look at this season. What's going on?
Yeah, but he's got. What I'm saying is, in his locker, he can do it.
Let's let Ellis land. Go on, Ellis.
Yeah, they're not. I'm not saying, like, you're saying Kovacic is a dribbler more than a passing midfielder. Same as Genie. They're not midfielders that you look to get on the ball and pick passes and dictate play. Do you know what I'm saying? And I think it's an ability in midfield that is vastly overlooked. If a player can get it from deep in his own half and move it and progress it like 25 yards forward, I think that's a very, very... very, very high skill that we should value in midfield. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that they're similar ability. I'm just saying that they're similar profile of players. And as a player, and for me, I like Genie to do it, but Genie doesn't do it enough. But he can do it. He done it against Real Madrid, like for the goal where he scored to make it 2-1. That's what he done. He picked up the ball from deep in half. He beat a couple man and he passed off. And it's something that you should really value. But Chelsea, you know what I mean? Like, you lot got money in it, so you lot can do anything. Like, me,
my play, Jane. That's funny because he did absolutely nothing the rest of the game. But
that's fair.
Sorry, this Kovacic discussion. Sorry, Babs, was a complete like side discussion from where you were going. So just to finish up what you were talking about in terms of Chelsea's attack yesterday and how nicely it was humming along.
Captain America finally got a goal, no? Didn't he, Babs?
Yeah, he finally got a goal or two. He got two goals. He seems to enjoy these games against Palace. And yeah, the first one was an amazing finish, you know. Kai picked up the ball in the penalty area. He slipped him in and he put it in top bins with his left foot on the first touch. And I do feel like, although he did get his goal, I did think he was kind of a passenger in the second half. You know, he didn't really hear his name much in terms of the commentary. He wasn't really trying to get involved in play. But I do think that was by design, the fact that when we do play Chova's right wing back versus Reece James, we try to actually focus our play down the right-hand side in terms of chance creation. So he could just say that he was a victim of that. But yeah, it was nice to see Pulisic getting on the score sheet. And yeah, not even just Pulisic, but with Kai, you know, that was an amazing.
Yeah, that's another player I want to ask you about. Make it brief as well.
I'll make it brief, man. But like, you know, as I said when I was last on the podcast, man, when you guys want to talk about Kai, you know, just come to me and him, man. I'll be here to answer your questions. I said it once and I say it again. You know, it was an amazing goal, you know. He was amazing in terms of like being able to counter press. Was it the counter press against Eze? You know, he won the ball back himself.
He played terrible. After Cho.
Who, Eze?
Yeah.
Eze stunk up.
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah, if I'm going to offer an alternative view, because as you said to us, you did watch the highlights, not an actual full game. What I will have to say is, Palace didn't actually offer him an out ball in terms of like when he had the ball. He did lose the ball there, but if you look there, his teammates just weren't there to show for the ball. Some people say, "Oh, clear the ball, you know, clear it out, get it out, whatever." But I do feel like
that wasn't the only time he lost the ball, though.
Yeah, I didn't say it was. I didn't say it was. I'm just saying that I don't think his teammates were able to actually help him in terms of like getting the ball off him as well. Because if they were, that goal maybe just doesn't happen. And yeah, as I was saying, Kai wins the ball back. You know, Cho is able to find him a nice incisive pass and it's a lovely finish. If I talk about Kai's performance in totality, I felt like it was strong. You know, it was promising. He said he didn't own a press conference that year. You know, this is only beginning. I don't want to be judged off one game because, hey, look, like it's a 38-game season. You know, you can't just give me praise from one game. And I do feel like that was positive to see because it just shows that the mentality that he has from, like, from a young player. And not even just that, like the positions he was picking up, you know, the runs he was making, I felt like it was just amazing to see from a forward playing for Chelsea.
I was going to say, like, his spatial awareness in that first goal. Eze was sloppy, but He, Kai was very, very, very alert, very reactive. You know, kind of moved again. Like Mariah was talking about that counter movement from Cavani in the box, and he continues. Like Havertz was just persistent in terms of just like moving off the ball, knowing where to stand in that space, and he demanded the ball and turned and finished. There was also that. Was it a ball that came over the top and he took the ball out the air that shot?
Oh man, if that went in,
you guys would have had to drag me off this podcast tonight. Yeah, nah, he was doing bits and then he got the assist as well for I think it was Pulisic's first goal. I liked what I saw from Kai. Yeah. I called him Kai Havoc yesterday because I think he was running amok yesterday.
Yeah, man, it was a name that was very well due. And just to wrap it up, I've got to give one more shout out to Mason flipping Mount, man. Mason Mount, what a player, what a player. The way that he's been revitalized on the Tuchel, you know, a lot of people gave him praise for how he played on Lampard. And personally for me, I don't think he was as good as what he's showing now. You know, like under Lampard, it was very much in the fact that he was able to just play no matter what. You know, he'd play like 90 minutes no matter the weather, no matter the game, he'd be playing. And if I look at a couple of games that he's played this season under Tuchel, he's been nothing short of amazing. And I don't think there's any reason why he's not going to be starting for England in the Euros.
Okay. I'll just watch, like, I feel like any time we have any sort of conversation, you have to mention Mason Mount. That's absolutely great, though. He's a really good player. I think the problem for him is that his fate was too intrinsically linked to Frank Lampard. So a lot of Lampard's failings were pushed onto Mount, almost as if he was to blame for them. So
it was almost reminiscent of Sarri and Jorginho, if you remember.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly just like that. So again, it's great to see Jorginho's established himself away from Sarri at Mount, who already had a body of work because he did some good stuff in the Netherlands too. Is starting to establish himself under Tuchel too. So, yeah, long may it continue. England have got a lot of talent in that sort of midfield area. So, yeah, shouts them out. And Ellis, last but not least, Liverpool, 2-1 win against Aston Villa. So, another team who avenged a loss from earlier in the season. I caught that on the Discord. A few of the Coppin brothers, not you. Give us your thoughts on the performance.
It was very, very... Wait, I'm trying to think of the right word. It wasn't good, you know.
Sounds speechless, bro.
Right, it wasn't really
good. I'm glad you said it, because I was thinking it.
Robert, you know me, I don't lie sometimes. But yeah, we started the first half well. We started well. We caused Villa a few problems. We had a few chances on goal. Salah had two chances where he should have tucked at least one away. We was giving Villa a lot of problems. We was pressing them well. The press was better from the Real Madrid game, where we was giving Real Madrid too much time on the ball, and obviously everyone saw what happened. They caught us. They caught us with the goals. But my problem is, from the Real Madrid game to this game, the passing is so poor. Like, we can't string five passes together. The confidence in the team is down. It's been down since January. We haven't really looked like a powerful team like we did last season. The front three, two of the... So we've got four forwards who are the regular four forwards. So you've got your Mane, Salah, Jota and Firmino. Jota's just come back. So then if you talk about Mane, Firmino and Salah, two of the three are off form. And it's absolutely killing us. I think since January we've had a...
These are Firmino numbers, aren't they?
They are his numbers, but the play in general is really bad, bro. The first touch is not there. The link-up play is not there.
At least he brings when he's not scoring.
So I'm saying, yeah, it's not there. He's not getting off his shots well. His shots are like, you know the ones where you kick the ball, you miss it, it starts dragging far away. Like, that's what he's doing. So yeah, that's really, really causing us problems. I think we've got like our chance conversion is like 0.9. It's like relegation form. So we've been in relegation form since January. So, but slowly but surely, we're turning it tad. I was kind of happy we got the win. We needed the win because of just the way the top four is shaping up. We had to just keep up with everyone. The second half was a bit better. We moved the ball a bit quicker. We looked a bit more. We looked like we really wanted to win the game. Villa took the lead. A poor mistake from Alisson. Alisson's going through the motions right now. I don't know if it's his father passing away or just the fact that everyone in front of him is playing poorly. I'm going to attribute it to his father passing away. It's kind of clouded his head, and I don't blame him for that, because some of the goals he's conceded, Real Madrid and Aston Villa, were very poor. He's got hands to it, but it's not strong enough. Usually, Alisson is a man who's more secure in that. So that he's off form, it shows. The fullbacks are off form. Both fullbacks look like they are running on thin air. There is no gas. Obviously, I know everyone likes to talk about Trent, but Robertson also is going through it. He's not playing well at all. The centre backs, can't really fault them. They're new to this level. Kabak just come from Germany. Nat Phillips is the one that's supposed to be at the club, but here we are. Midfield's a lot of chop and chain. One good thing is Fabinho coming back into the midfield. He's added a bit of steel. Didn't really play well against Real Madrid. Yeah. Played okay against Villa.
Yeah. Middling performances from him.
Huh?
Last couple of performances in that role been not the best from Fabinho.
It hasn't been. It hasn't. Aston Villa was better than Real Madrid. Real Madrid was dire, bro. Real Madrid was dire. I can't remember. I'm one of his biggest fans, but he was just really bad. But against Villa, he was a little bit better. He was a bit more secure. He was getting his tackles in. You know what I'm saying? He was doing his job up there. Genie's Genie, man. Genie's Genie. I don't know how to describe him, bro. But when he plays well, he's the guy. You know what I'm saying?
How often has that been this week?
That's the problem.
He's played well for months.
That's the problem. And that's the problem we're having. He has not played well. for months. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he's one of the senior players. You want him to stand up. You want him to...
Senior man, yeah?
Like, Real Madrid, fam, Real Madrid was getting bossed by Modric. Modric's, like, on his way to his pension, fam.
He's not.
Did you say, but the thing is, bro, the thing is, like...
Football heritage, like, right? Let's not do that.
No, I'm not saying Modric is not a... He's a fantastic baller. That's what I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, at 35 years old, try and get, you know what I mean, like, rough him up a bit, fam. I don't know if he wants to run around.
You should be able to get around him at his age, despite his ability.
I'm telling you, lot, boy, he's balling like he's still 30, man. Like,
yeah, bro, a few of them are at Madrid.
I watched the Clásico yesterday. Zidane's hooking off 31-year-old Toni Kroos to give him a rest
ahead of him.
Can I ask
Ellis though, because Ellis, you was talking of you quite critical of the team not in recent games not really being able to pull passes together. Obviously the midfield has been reconfigured a lot because of the defensive injuries, because of other factors as well this season. But yeah, how much of that do you think is because Liverpool haven't really played through the middle? So now that they can't constantly go to that kind of like super direct type of football, they're needing to kind of figure out different ways to play and have different means. Obviously the Thiago thing, that hasn't really worked so far this season, not in the way that it's intended to. But how much of it do you think is because of that, or do you think it's just something else?
I don't really think it's that much, you know, bro. Even though we're not really a team that builds our attacks from the middle, I still feel that the midfielders we have enough in their armoury to formulate something, you know what I'm saying? So, with Thiago coming in, we thought that he will be the guy that's going to pick up passes from the deep-lying playmaker role. And obviously, where we've had to put Fabinho and Henderson at the back, he hasn't had that security around him. And it's kind of affected his game. But I just think that the main crux of it is that the fatigue mentally has really caught up to Liverpool, you know what I'm saying? So they're running through a brick wall. So to answer your question, bro, I don't think because we don't play through the middle as such, it's really now, it's like starting to show that, like, oh, Rob, you can't do it. I just feel that there's been too much chop and change around the team for us to have any consistent playing style, if that makes any sense, bro.
I have a question as well, Liz. Do you think that chop and change is being compounded by Klopp actually just trying to, like, not play these centre-backs and put, like, a Fabinho or Henderson in midfield, whereas he could have, like, actually played these centre-backs and just had, like, an actual structure in midfield from the beginning?
I think Klopp has to take the blame there. Since January, he's made a few alarming mistakes. For instance, now, don't get me wrong, like, Nat Phillips, innit, if he's listening, I respect you, bro, you've done your thing, innit, you're better than me, fair enough, but he's not supposed to be at this level, do you know what I'm saying? And because it's, and it's showing, like, in January, he's played a few games, I think he played against Newcastle, we drew with him away, and he tried to, like, pass out from the back, and he just kept on over-hitting it or under-hitting it. So it was really affecting us, you know what I mean? So usually our centre-backs, if it's Matip or Van Dijk, they're very good passers of the ball. So either Matip will bring it out because he's a good dribbler, or he passes, he fizzes it in to, like, the midfielder, to a Firmino, or he can find the fullbacks on both sides, same as Van Dijk. But then you have, like, Phillips, and he can't really do it because that's not his game. Young Williams, that's not his game. He can't do it. He was playing conference football last season. He can't do it. So I think Klopp just wanted to try and maintain that style of playing out from the back, and it wasn't working. So that's what's really, really, really hindered us. And it got to January and we didn't sign a centre-back. I remember coming on a pod and saying, like, we need to sign a centre-back by the 1st of January, and we didn't do it. And it kind of messed us up, man. So we are where we are just because of that. Just because of the last, couple months. We're in April now. We're trying to play catch-up. Boy, it's peak. But We got the win. We got the win, and
that's the most important part, man.
I'm in midfield, but all that, I'm ranting. You actually won.
He's like, shit, we won. I forgot about that.
We won the game, yeah. Trent scored in that. We won the game, but it didn't feel like, all right, a last minute winner, because we were just, I wasn't impressed, bro. But having said that, this is the first time since the first month of the season where we've won three Premier League games in a row, which can show you that we've been going through it, fam.
Scary.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, cool. I'm going to have a conversation which really pertains to three of the four panelists this evening. So we're talking about the top four race. We didn't say three out of the four, not four out of the four. It's obviously Arsenal are too far away. And in terms of us...
Can we cancel Spurs out of it as well?
No. Mathematically, you're still in there. And I think we're safe now. I think many teams are going to get as many points as we have at this point. We've got Leicester in third on 56 points and all the way down to Spurs in seventh on 49 points. So you're talking about a 7-point gap with seven games to go. Where do we see this going? Obviously, Leicester, they lost today against West Ham, made a valiant effort. Senior man Kelechi, not quite enough today. But who do we see finishing in the top four? I'll start with you, Tobes.
Obviously the top two aside, I still think Leicester are going to get it, man. I think Leicester are going to get it. I feel like Brendan Rodgers, I don't think he's going to let it slip again. I don't know whether it's going to be third or fourth, but I think they're going to take one of the spots. And annoyingly, I think Chelsea are going to get top four as well.
Okay, let me just read out Leicester's fixtures. So they've got home games against West Brom and Palace, away against Southampton.
Yeah.
Game against Leicester, away against Manchester United, away against Chelsea, and at home against Spurs.
Yeah, the destiny's in their hands, man. And I think I feel like they will have some players back for that running as well. I'm expecting Harvey Barnes to be back for some of those fixtures towards the latter stages of the season. I don't know, man. I get it. Like Liverpool, when you look at their run of fixtures, you look like you see like some straightforward games that they should win. But like Ellis mentioned, even though I felt Liverpool were okay against Aston Villa, there's just something missing in their game. Like they don't knock the same. They don't attack teams the same. They don't defend the same. Alisson in Blunderland 24/7 these days. They're just, Sadio Mane can't score. If he was in the red light district, like it's sad. It's sad times. So,
you love a one-liner, don't you?
No, it's the truth though. the thing is, Liverpool, I expect Liverpool to be in the race right until the race is going to go right up until the final day. But I feel like Leicester and Chelsea will edge it, man.
Cool. Fair enough. Ellis, who do you see finishing in the top four?
I think Liverpool and Chelsea, heritage things, fam. I think I don't trust Rodgers.
I'm going to need more than that.
I don't trust Rodgers, man.
Ellis,
that's the analysis they come to Touchline Records for, man.
Ellis, what happened?
Heritage.
What happened the last time you spoke about heritage? The last time some of your fan base spoke about football heritage, you went to a real football heritage club in the Champions League and you got dunked on. So
listen, Tottenham Tobias.
Heritage
and Tobias are not supposed to be in the same. Okay. Thank you, sir. So what I'm saying, I think Chelsea and Liverpool are going to take it. I think both are going to get into a strong run of form. Like I said, Liverpool's won the last three Premier Leagues. I know I sound a bit despondent. We're not playing too well, but I feel that we have a very, very calm running and we'll pick up confidence from that last minute win against Aston Villa. So I think Chelsea and Liverpool.
Cool. I'll get your opinion, Shab, despite the fact your team are not in it. Who do you think gets the last two spots in that top four race?
I think Chelsea secure one. I think Leicester have got some hard fixtures, you know, including a game against Chelsea, if I'm not mistaken. And I just see Chelsea having like a lot about them. And actually, they're probably behind City. They're probably the team in the league that have impressed me most since Frank Lampard got sacked. So I think they've been one of the most consistent teams in the Prem as well. That West Brom game was a blip. But apart from that, I can recall good results and good performances for them. So I think there's certainly in there. With Liverpool, I don't think Liverpool have a tough run in. I think the toughest fixture that they've got is United. But I think Liverpool's is dependent on the Champions League both ways. And I think if Liverpool come out on Tuesday or Wednesday night, I think that could really just derail their season. Yeah. They may rally. They may do bits. It makes it somewhat easier. I think it's a blessing, by the way, if Liverpool come out, because I think those players are pammed. They're absolutely shattered. So I think it's a blessing in disguise if they do come out. But obviously, you know, they're big boys, isn't it? They want to go for the big things. I fully get that. But yeah, I think if they come out, it could derail them. If they stay in, then I think it could also derail them because it's additional fixtures. And the way that I just look at these guys, they're tired, man. They're tired. They're absolutely tired. So it's an outsider's chance for me. But yeah, man, I think really Chelsea do it. And yeah, I think Leicester will fall away as well. I'm saying Chelsea and maybe Liverpool, perhaps.
It's not interesting. And Babs, last but not least, two sides do you see finishing in the top four?
I think it's quite a tough one to judge because if I look just literally before Tuchel came in, we were what 5 points off Liverpool, 7 points off Spurs, I think like 9 points off Leicester. You know, I don't know the numbers on my head. I look at our performances since Tuchel's come in. You know, we've looked a lot stronger. We looked a whole lot stronger in terms of like our possessional play and how we played the game, but. The only worry I've still had is just in terms of our lethality in front of goal. I think that's one of the things that's going to be really key in this run of games because we have 2 6-pointers against West Ham and Leicester. And the reason why those are so key is the fact that we're 2 points behind Leicester, 1 point behind West Ham. You know, you win that game there, you have a massive swing in terms of your form because I believe we had those games relatively close to each other as well. So I think if we win those games, we should be getting top four. So I will have to say, I think we will get a top four. I think we will get top four. And as crazy as it's going to sound, but I feel like West Ham are going to do it. I feel like West Ham, I can't believe I'm saying this because I just look at West Ham, the team they've been. You know, if I look at it last season, a lot of our fan base made the jokes amongst us and the fact that we were saying, oh, you know, when we beat West Ham and they get relegated, we'll be signing Declan Rice. And now look at it, you know, we gave them two back-to-back Ws, you know, we let them stay in the Prem, and now they're looking like they're going to get Europe. And it's literally crazy scenes. And I do feel like they're going to be able to do it because if I look at their run of games, I don't see any team which is going to pose them too much of a threat, bar us and Everton maybe. And yeah, I do think Liverpool have a good run in, and I do feel like just because of the quality that Liverpool possess, they can go away and win all their games. You know, like I don't want to be that guy that does the whole thing of like, oh, you know, they're the reigning champions. But I do feel like you have to give them the praise where it's due. You know, they were this fantastic team last season, and yeah, you know that kind of talent doesn't just disappear overnight.
In muscle memory, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think West Ham are going to be there and thereabouts. Yeah. I think your game against them is a big one.
If they big one, massive.
That without losing, then I'll have a lot more confidence in them being able to
secure
the top four spot. It's going to be interesting nonetheless. Honestly, I wish I was in it, but I don't. we've wrapped up Champions League football for next season. And I guess we can focus our
Hey, I can't lie. I'm so jealous, man. I'm so jealous. I'm not built for this, man. This is 3 years in a row we've been doing this bullshit. I ain't built for this, man.
I wish I was in Mariah's position where I was second and I could still complain about the manager. I wish I could do that.
We're built different, Brody. Finally, and this is the part where not quite relevant to you this time, Tobes, but always happy to have your thoughts. Let's talk about the European fixtures, the midweek fixtures and where we're at. I'll start with you, Shabs. So first leg, 1-1 draw against Slavia Prague at home. What do you need to do in the second leg to go through?
They need to win. It's that simple. Yeah. Like, win. They need to win. That's what is needed. The problem with Arsenal is that, Arsenal have this unrivaled ability to fuck up anything, which is super easy and straightforward for them. So, you know, case in point, Thursday, gone. You know, super, like, not that it was the most comfortable of games, but there were loads of chances. It was as open a game as we'll find at that stage of a European competition, I think. And there were loads of chances and they just messed it up time and again and finally got themselves in the position to lead late on and threw it away, like absolutely threw it away. A catalogue of errors where your left back can just drive into the vacant space and progress the ball forward, but instead turns around, plays it backwards to the centre-back who heavy touches it, plays it out, and then you concede from that the corner, and then you concede again. It's just like absolutely comical stuff. So I don't know, man. I don't have a lot of confidence, to be fair. I don't think that Arsenal are not a team with European heritage. They just don't. Like, they always, always, always mess it up in Europe. That's just facts. Like, any Arsenal fans or otherwise want to fight me on that, let's go. It's just facts. Like, we can go to anywhere you want to go to with Arsenal in European competition. If anyone dares drag up that 94 Cup Winners' Cup stuff with me, allow it. Just allow it. Don't do it. But yeah, like, we could go to Galatasaray. We can go to Barcelona. We could go wherever you want to go. We'll go to Chelsea in Baku. Wherever you want to go, you could go to the Atletico Madrid semi-final. Like, Arsenal just find ways to mess it up. So that's it, man. I'm not confident. Some of it depends on player availability and player selection. A lot of it depends on player selection. Like, who's Arteta going to go with? You know what I mean? Like, are you really going to pick the team that is it can win, or are you going to pick your boys like Willian and them, man? And that's the foolish thing. This guy's moving like he's not under duress. Like, he'd never, ever, ever get away with this if the streets were open and fans could come in the state. Like, the way that Wenger got chased out. You think Arteta could turn up at London Colney if we was not in quarantine? No, I don't mean, when I say we are, obviously not me, I'm not a hooligan, but, you know, disclaimer, you know. But, you know, certain man there, they wouldn't have this, you know. So, you know, yeah, man. So, it's up to him, innit? But, like, you know, be a man, do the right thing, all of that. But I just see it happening. I just see like some real tears on Thursday night, really, for Arsenal. I'm happy to be wrong, but the way I see things right now.
One of the interesting things you just said was in terms of like the lineup, and one thing I've always thought is that, like, Arteta is a man of misplaced values. You know, like, he thinks that, oh, you know, he has the absolute cheek to drop his best striker. You know, some people say statistically he hasn't been the best this season, but the absolute cheek in one of the most important games this season is drop Aubameyang. And the moment he comes in, you guys go and score a goal. And I feel like he's pretty crazy, because, like, he's almost like this kind of authoritarian where, like, he thinks he has the respect to be able to, you know, drop players when he wants. You know, it's worked, you know, like games against Tottenham.
But you're just making my head hot.
Very, very easy for it to backfire.
Just making my head hot. I've been composed. And the moment the whole
that back room, you know, the room of all the players, you know, the moment they turn against him, boy, his head may just been a chopping block.
But you're making my head.
But long may it rain. Long may it rain.
No, you're making my head hot, because you see all this non-negotiables stuff, yeah? It's absolute bullshit. Like, it's absolute bullshit. You look at, let's take Aubameyang out of the situation. Let's look at the Martinelli situation, for example. He played today. He played well today. He scored today. You know what I mean? He's had, for the few minutes that he's amassed in the league so far this season, and we know we had the injury coming into the season, he wasn't fit until December, blah, blah, blah. For the few minutes that he's amassed this season, he's had more shots than Willian. Willian gets game time in abundance. Like, how do you justify it? Like, how do you justify it? It's crazy. Like, he starts, these men are cracking up on me. It's killing me. It's absolutely killing me. But yeah, like, so you can't say, like, yeah, these are principles and this is the level of performance and blah, blah, blah. Pepe is a divisive figure. But again, like, you know, anytime he does something good, he, as a signing, he's been an absolute failing of a signing at £72 million. Like, let's not like beat around the bush. But anytime he does anything positive or progressive, he finds himself out of the side. How can you justify that? Willian gets to come in again and play and start, and it's crazy, man. You know, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I think there's even a period when where he had some good form this season, and he still wasn't guaranteed a start.
Like, you know, I think he played well today, albeit against Sheffield United, but I think he played well today. He played well when he came on Thursday. Let's see what happens, you know. Is he going to start? Because he should be starting that game, but let's see. Let's see what Mikel does.
Joffrey Arteta, that's what I'm calling him from now on, Joffrey.
Fucking tyrant, mate. And he was a meaty player as well, and I just want that on the record. Yeah, he was an absolutely meaty footballer. Yeah,
well, they're trying to rewrite history. Yeah,
I just want that on record. Yeah, I said it. Me.
Cool. I'm gonna come across to you, Ellis. A 3-1 loss to Real Madrid in the first leg. So you've got a big job at Anfield. I think yesterday was your first win at Anfield in 2021. Hadn't scored a goal.
Yes, sir.
Over 11 hours, and as you said, it wasn't necessarily the best performance either. Watched Real Madrid win Clasico and really put themselves in the driving seat for the La Liga title. What do you need to do to get through, and do you see it happening?
We need to pray to Almighty tomorrow starts around that. Yeah, everyone needs to be honest. Everyone needs to. Now, all jokes aside, fam. We need to play better than we did.
He went from jokes aside.
We need to I think in the first leg we gave Real Madrid too much respect. I don't know if that was out of tactical instructions from Klopp, or just Real Madrid just took the ball off us, because that first.
What was the instruction? Respect them.
I don't know, like, fam. I don't know what the instructions were. It was like, bro, because in my head, yeah, you're looking at it, you're giving Tony Cruz like 5 minutes to set himself up, look up, holler at Vinicius, wave at Vinicius, tell Vinicius to move. And it's just so easy. So I'm thinking, what's going on there? We need to get in their faces, we need to shut down all the passing lanes, we need to stop them from picking their heads up and looking for the passes.
Do you know what's underrated?
Is it, bro?
Do you know what's underrated about them? Their physical capabilities.
Very strong.
They were
very
able strong. To hang with you guys physically. Yeah. And that's usually where you really put the pressure onto teams.
Yeah.
I saw it against Barcelona. They were able to use their physical gifts to really consistently hit Barcelona and break. And to be honest with you, on a day when they have their shooting boots on, they score 3 or 4 goals. And that game was a lot more comfortable than it ended up being. But you're mentioning pressing and getting in their faces. Even within that midfield, you're talking about two of the most technically proficient midfielders of the last 10, 15 years. You're talking about probably the most technically proficient number 9 around in Karim Benzema. So how realistic is that? And to be honest, just picking you off on the break, that played very much to their strengths. They love it.
It was so easy for them. You know, I was talking about earlier on how we can't string 5 passes together. Against Real Madrid, we couldn't string 2. We'll misplace it and then they'll just look up and go. And so I don't know what Liverpool need to do. I don't know who's gonna start, because if you're looking to start Gini and Thiago and Fabinho, they're physical players. Gini and Fabinho, they're very physical players, and I feel that they're always up for it in terms of a physical battle, innit? But like you said, are they up for it against technically proficient players in Cruz and Modric and Casemiro? I didn't talk about Casemiro in the first leg. He was a monster. Brilliant. He was everywhere. You know what I'm saying? He was a monster. I thought he was better than Modric and Cruz, because he was shutting down everything. He was not letting Liverpool do anything. When Gini did finally decide he wants to do something, we showed that we could get at them. So I feel like the gap's too much for us. I just feel Real Madrid are in a good position, and beating Barca in the weekend is giving them even more confidence than they need. So it'll be hard for us, man. I don't expect us to win or go through, so we'll have to take that one on the chin, brother.
Yeah, man. It's been a great run. For us, it's a 2-0 win away from home. We're coming home against what's an average Granada side. They conceded the most goals in La Liga. Should just be business as usual, to be honest with you. Grab a couple of goals, ideally rest some players ahead of the weekend game. And we'll see the winner of the Ajax at Roma tie in the semis. And I come to another tie, which looks like it's pretty much done and dusted. Again, that's you, Babs. As I mentioned earlier, you guys have had a pretty good week. So it was a comfortable, it was a 2-0 win, right? Against, So, in your position, what are you expecting to see in the second leg? Players rested?
I don't think we rested any players, just due to the fact that we're playing on Tuesday. I mean, we'll have the FA Cup game against City on Saturday. And to our benefit, City will be playing the day afterwards. And they're going to have a lot more pressure, you know, playing against Dortmund, who've only beaten 2-1. So hopefully we will be able to not really rest, but actually get players up to speed. Because I do think Tuchel is going to actually want to go for it on Saturday against Man City and get some silverware at the end of the season. So for me personally, I do think it'll be a mixture of being able to rest a couple of players here and there, but I don't think we're going to take too many risks, because I don't know if you guys watched the game, but Porto were a lot more impressive in one leg than what I found Atletico Madrid to have been in over the two legs. And this season in particular, Porto have been pretty decent under this manager. They have Catenaccio, you know, he's had this like Conchao, whatever his name is. I'm sorry, man.
Wait, what's going on there?
Wait, that's one in the Italian defensive philosophy of
this guy is trying to sound uber intelligent.
I just got his name wrong, Gaffer.
You know what we call that? Faux intelligista. But continue.
As I was saying, he's been pretty strong with Porto this side of the year, especially. You know, they've had good results like against Juventus. These guys are killing me in the background. But yeah, I don't think they're a team to be taken lightly in the Champions League, personally. And hopefully we are able to comfortably get a win and get through the second leg.
Cool. Yeah, with that Conte style, you showed your age there. I think Shabs, Ellis, Toby, you'll all remember Conte style from the 2000s. So we don't blame you. We don't blame you.
I'm sorry, man.
No worries.
I'm the new gen.
One more time for me. All right, Babs, one more time. Say again. Yo, that's fantastic.
That killed me. I was like, what? Oh. I know that ain't who I think it is. Oh, what? But with that, lads, I want to thank you for your time. Tobes, always a pleasure. Thank you for taking a bullet for Spurs this week and all the other weeks you've done it. Ellis, always a pleasure, bro. Wish you the best of luck against Madrid. Shabs, the same against Slavia Prague. Not quite the same status of tie, but, you know, they all count. And Catenaccio. And
Catenaccio, you know.
I can't either. You're moving crazy, bro.
I love it. Guys, have a nice evening, man. Take care.
Bless.
Peace.
Podcast Network.